now all we need.
We, of course, explore various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And tonight, we're going to be talking about what I'm titling the show, A Healing Place, with our guest, Regina Perlmutter. And I've done shows on healing before, and they've always turned out to be pretty popular. It's a very popular subject, and I think it's vastly under-investigated, so I'm really, really excited about our guest tonight because she is really advanced in this field. Her name is Regina Perlmutter, and she is actually a licensed psychotherapist, a certified hypnotherapist, a massage therapist, a Reiki master, a feng shui master, handwriting analysis specialist, a teacher of tantra, a practicing shaman, and a medical intuitive. So our guest is really quite accomplished, actually, so I'm really, really excited. And did I mention that? And gives hands-on healing and psychic readings, and past life regressions, and so much more. So I'm very, very excited about having you on the show tonight. Regina, thank you so much for coming on.
And thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, everyone, this is a call-in show. So remember, if you have a question for our guest, please, please feel free to call us. I'm going to give out the number right now. It's 888-228-4494. That's toll-free, so give us a call. 888-228-4494. And our guest has actually a website that if you want to learn more about her, you can go and visit that, which is lightonlove.com. All one word, lightonlove.com. So, Regina, how did you get involved in this subject, or all these subjects, for that matter?
Well, I've always been interested in helping people. In fact, I remember as young as kindergarten, other kids would come and tell me their problems. And I would find tremendous satisfaction and fulfillment when that would happen and in helping them to resolve those problems. So it's always been going on ever since I was literally 3 or 4 years old. And so it was natural that I would pursue a degree in psychotherapy as I got older, which I did. And then one thing led to another, and I became fascinated with hypnotherapy. And then I became fascinated with past life regressions. And then my psychic powers kind of kicked in all by themselves. And the fact is I have been all over the planet studying with masters, healers, shamans, gurus, teachers, learning many, many, many different techniques and modalities. And it's really my passion and my mission. And kind of the guiding force in this lifetime is to facilitate the healing of other people.
Wow, how exciting. To have traveled all over the place and met all these really interesting people. So it started with an interest in hypnosis?
No, it started with an interest in helping to heal people. And I first went and got an official, university advanced degree in psychotherapy. And then I became very frustrated with its limitations because I noticed that people who came to me with very severe traumas, that just talking about it or gaining insight into where did the trauma come from and how did it start, that in itself was not enough to make the suffering or the pain or the symptoms go away. So I actually became very frustrated with the limitations of conventional talk therapy. And I was actually on the verge of leaving the field.
Wow.
When into my life there came a series of powerful healers, and that's when I realized, hey, this is what I want to do. So I then began to pursue those studies and became quite intrigued and fascinated, and here I am today.
Right.
And one thing would just lead me to another and to another.
Right. I think hypnosis has vastly underestimated its power. I mean, we see these stage tricks on TV where people are, you know, made to believe they're a celebrity or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, well, those are stage hypnotists that you see on TV. Those are entertainers who happen to know some hypnosis. I am not a stage hypnotist. I've been asked to do it, but I won't because I'm not an entertainer. I consider hypnotherapy, the people who are therapists who practice hypnosis, we really call ourselves hypnotherapists versus hypnotists. Hypnotists
right.
are lay people. Hypnotherapists are psychotherapists who happen to practice the art of hypnosis as part of their therapeutic intervention. The big difference is, A, we don't do it to entertain anyone. We don't do it as a gimmick. We don't do it just to amuse myself or the client or an audience. We do it for very, very serious and powerful and very deep healing. For instance, I have more than a 92% success rate with smoking cessation. I have helped people overcome very, very paralyzing and crippling traumas, phobias, stage fright. I've worked with a lot of people in the entertainment industry who have sometimes crippling fear or stage fright when they're about to go before the camera or stage, or in one case, a concert musician whose hands would tremble when he began to perform. So that's the major difference between what you've seen on stage and what I do with my clients. Another thing we do not do is we never, ever give them the suggestion that they will forget everything. Everything is done with their consent and with full awareness.
Right.
And we don't do those funny tricks that they do on stage. You know, we don't make anyone act like a chicken or anything like that. But as far as hypnotherapy is concerned, believe it or not, there was a study done at the University of Texas where they worked with female subjects to see if they could get them to increase their breast size. And guess what? It worked. And that
wow.
is how incredibly powerful hypnosis and the power of suggestion can be. And then they did some research where they would place a penny into a subject's palm and tell them it was a hot coal, and they would develop a blister. And the opposite was true as well. They would place a hot coal on someone's palm and tell them it was a penny, and they would have absolutely no reaction whatsoever.
Wow. See that?
And I've done also a lot of work with people about to go into surgery where I gave them the post-hypnotic suggestion that there would be no discomfort or pain or swelling, that the recovery would be very, very easy and smooth, and that's exactly what they would later on report to me. Is exactly what indeed did happen with them.
Right.
So
right.
hypnotherapy is a very powerful tool. I also do past life regressions.
That's just
I've done hundreds and hundreds of them.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, I've got some books on that, and of course I totally believe in past lives because I've had, I guess, you know, dreams and things like this. And actually, so there's many accounts where people have actually, you know, been healed of actual physical illness as a result of having a past life regression.
Absolutely, all the time. And it's interesting that you mentioned that you've had dreams because it's, in fact, very common to see one's past lives during dreams. It's very, very common. In fact, many people become aware of past lives through dream state. What you mentioned is quite common, that someone who has perhaps an ongoing allergy or perhaps an unexplained pain somewhere in their body or some kind of energetic blockage somewhere in the body, or perhaps recurring migraines. Very, very often these sometimes baffling to the medical community kind of symptoms that there's no reasonable explanation for. Very often, when you investigate it through a past life, you will come up with the explanation. For instance, a lot of people have issues with their throat. For instance, people will tell you they cannot tolerate any kind of turtleneck. Have you ever met someone who cannot tolerate wearing any kind of turtleneck sweater?
Sure,
have you ever heard of that?
Oh, absolutely. Huh? I can't stand having my bed sheets lying across my neck. I just can't.
Okay, absolutely, yes. A lot of people will tell you strange, obscure symptoms like that. Very often, if it's a neck issue, you go into a past life regression. It could be due to a hanging, a strangling, or even a guillotine death from another lifetime.
Wow.
Some people have issues like that with their eyes, where they're afraid of anybody coming near their eyes. They can't wear contact lenses, for instance. They cannot tolerate to be examined closely by the eye doctor. All kinds of things like that. Some people have strange birthmarks that are very large, that look like stab wounds. And that's simply the body remembering the trauma from another time that is still in the person's aura or energetic field.
Right, right. I've seen some remarkable cases of that with the birthmarks and the, you know, various marks on the body, which I think pretty much proves that reincarnation is a reality, even if we don't fully understand
Absolutely.
It.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes.
Wow, so what's the process then when you do a past life regression? Is it easy for people to just slip into a past life?
It's extremely easy. Unless you're afraid or nervous, you may kind of block it. But if you can overcome that, it's actually quite easy, and it's often like popping a videotape into the VCR. It's actually that easy. And you will remember it all, and the most common question is, well, how do I know I didn't make it up? How do I know? Because some of these past lives can be so incredibly dramatic. So it's common for people to say, well, did I make that up? The
right.
fact is we frequently see past lives where things were not exactly pleasant, or we were not exactly pleasant characters, and we maybe did some things that we're not exactly proud of. And
right.
all the accompanying feelings and emotions are often there and come to the surface. And I assure you, I've personally seen many of my past lives that, let's just say, I'm not exactly proud of them. And so it takes a lot of courage, actually, to be willing to see some of them. And
would that be because these are the issues that are most pressing to our spiritual growth and dealing with the bad things we've done or the things we've suppressed?
Absolutely. The reason why people say, well, why do a past life regression? What's the point? The reason is that a lot of our karmic issues today in this lifetime, for instance, having to do with money or love or relationships, any big recurring blockages that we encounter in our current life are frequently the result of a seed that was planted in the past. And this is now the fruit that has grown from that seed. Like Jesus said, you reap what you sow. What he meant was, if you plant orange seeds in a past life, in this life, you're going to have an orange tree. It's as simple as that. So any actions in past lives will have repercussions. the point is not to be punished, because I don't believe in a God that punishes. There is, however, consequences. So if you abuse your power, or you misuse your creativity or your sexual energy in a past life, you will encounter challenges in those areas very likely in this life. And again, the purpose is not to punish you, but the purpose is to heal and to learn correct relationship with that energy. And you do that by learning the lesson, which is do not misuse your power, do not misuse your sexual energy, do not misuse your creativity to harm anyone. Use it with honesty and with love and with fairness. And forgive yourself. Forgiveness is a huge lesson always. Forgive yourself and then begin to honor yourself and honor your gift, your power, your creativity. And by doing so, you unravel that karmic knot that shows up in this life as a blockage or a challenge. Also, very often, you may notice that you will meet someone and you have an either instant like or camaraderie or resonance with them.
Right,
and
right.
The converse is true. You meet someone and you just don't trust them. You don't like them. They rub you the wrong way. Within 5 minutes of meeting them, you just don't feel good about this person. And they may be a perfectly nice person. Why? Because, you know, very often the roots are somewhere in the past where this person may have harmed you or hurt you or betrayed you in some way.
Well, in your work, have you had any indication of how many lives a person lives? Say,
that's
you know
a
what I
great
mean?
Question. It depends on who you talk to. I've literally seen thousands of my own, literally thousands. So some people would tell you millions. Some people would say hundreds of thousands. I know one thing. It definitely matters from and it varies from person to person, actually. You have what is called a very old soul, or you can have what is called a younger soul. So one thing, we don't know exactly how many. I can't really give you a number. I can tell you that it varies tremendously from person to person.
And people
who are old souls usually know that they're old. And people who are younger souls usually know that they're younger. And people who are medium, they know that too. You kind of have a sense of it. And usually people who are interested in the phenomenon we're talking about tend to be the older souls.
And when you do this work, it's not like everyone's coming back and thinking they're Joan of Arc or the Queen of England. I mean, what kind of lives do these people remember living? Just normal lives?
Okay, sometimes the lives are incredibly non-eventful. You are a poor peasant. Nothing very significant happens other than maybe you die in a flood or a war or through starvation, because many of us did indeed die through, some painful, difficult deaths such as starvation. Some of the lives are very, very eventful. Some of them are not very eventful. One thing that I have noticed is we have done it all. We've been the villains, and we've been the perpetrators, and we've been the victims. We have done it all. We have gone back and forth. We have been very wealthy kings and queens, and we have been paupers. We have been beggars. We've been very, very powerful, and we have been peons and slaves and not very powerful at all. We have pretty much explored the entire spectrum of the human experience at this point. One can feel pretty confident that we've pretty much explored it all at this point.
Right. Well, it makes you wonder
most
what's next.
What?
You know what I mean? It makes you kind of wonder what's next. What is all this leading up to?
Good question. There are people who do future life progressions as well.
Wow. So So, well, let's move on. I mean, there's so many subjects I want to talk about. And I wondered if you could, like, touch on handwriting analysis, which is something I find particularly interesting, because that's something I kind of do at parties every now and then, is I'll ask people to sign their signature. And just kind of looking at it, I get a sense of who they are a little bit, and I can do a little bit of a reading, and it's fun, and especially when you get, you know, a hit on people. When you get it accurate, I mean. So could you talk a little bit about what handwriting analysis is and how it works? And
sure. Yeah, handwriting analysis is a very ancient science. It actually goes back to even as far back as ancient Egypt, believe it or not, when they used to do the hieroglyphics in stone. And it is the science, and it is indeed a science. It's much more acknowledged in Europe than it is here. In Europe, it's very common for big companies like IBM or Apple computers to require a handwriting sample from a prospective employee to see if they're going to be ambitious and hardworking and reliable, because these are all qualities that can be ascertained through one's handwriting. It's also even common for a potential landlord to request your sample to see if you're going to pay the rent on time, if you're going to be a troublemaker, or you're going to be a good tenant. Because all of these qualities do indeed show up in one's handwriting. And so in the U.S., it's still considered somewhat of a novelty. And the fact is, it is indeed a science. And it is a science that deduces the character of a person, the hidden talents, the mood of a person, the degree to which they get along with people, and most of all, are they good communicators? Because handwriting, after all, is foremost the science or the act of communicating to another person. So I'm frequently asked, well, what does it mean, you know, the proverbial doctor signature, you know, that we all make jokes about, that is illegible. Okay, well, because handwriting is actually communication, what we do is we look at the body of the letter. A handwriting analyst will always ask you to submit a sample on unlined paper. Why? Because the slant is very, very, very revealing. It can tell us whether the person is upbeat and optimistic or pessimistic or even depressed or ill. And this is all done just from the direction that the slants go, the lines, the angle at which the lines go. As we also look at the angle at which the letters are directed. And, yes, I was saying about ability to communicate. So if the body of the letter is easy to read, it means that this person is a good communicator and that they put effort into communicating thoroughly and effectively with their listener. The signature is, what is the signature? The signature is, who am I? So the signature is often not decipherable for many people. What that means is, let's say you have a legible body of the letter signed by an illegible signature. That would mean that they're a good communicator about things that are not personal, but when it comes to their deeper, most innermost emotions, they are somewhat enigmatic and hard to decipher or figure out. Why? Because they are perhaps private. They don't want everyone to know their deeper, most innermost thoughts, and they're kind of hard to read, exactly like their signature would be. And there are, of course, signatures you see that there's no way on earth you could ever, ever figure them out. And so chances are they belong to a person who is kind of hard to read and hard to figure out as well. And needs to work on their communication. If I see that in a married person, usually the spouse will report that they have to really do quite a bit of digging to get them to open up and talk about their feelings.
Interesting, very interesting stuff. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Regina Perlmutter. And we're talking about various healing work and that she does. And now you have a website. You want to give out the web address and any contact information?
Sure. I'm located in Encino, California, which is part of Los Angeles. I do a lot of work over the phone or in my office. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. My phone number is 818-609-0532. And my website is www.lightonlove.com, that's spelled L-I-G-H-T on love.com/healing and another /. So lightonlove.com/healing/.
Very good. And if anyone wants to call into the show, remember it is a call-in show. The number is 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you if you have any questions you'd like to ask our guest. So now, what is theta healing? Is that hands-on healing?
I am a hands-on healer. I am a hands-on healer. However, theta healing does not involve the hands. Theta healing is relatively new on the scene. It is very, very, very powerful, and I'm very excited about it. It was developed about 15 years ago by a woman who lives in Idaho, whose name is Vianna Stiebel, who was a single mother of three young children at the time, and developed a very, very serious case of inoperable, incurable cancer. She was told that she was going to die, that there was absolutely nothing they could do for her. It was in her leg. They advised her that the most they could do for her to give her a couple of months more of life was to remove the leg and do an amputation.
Wow.
When she was told this, it was very, very, very distressing for her because she was also advised that she needed to find homes, foster homes for her three very young children. So she got on her knees day after day and would just beseech God and Jesus to help her and intervene and for the sake of her children. And she kind of made a deal with God that she didn't mind going, but to please, please spare her life just long enough to raise those children. And then she said she would gladly move on, and she was actually not attached to remaining alive. She was just very, very much concerned to not abandon her three young children. So what happened was this technique came through. She healed herself completely. She's completely fine, and this is 15 years later, and mm-hmm. The leg is completely, completely fine and in perfect health, and the doctors were completely astonished because they had never, ever seen or heard of a case like this very aggressive form of cancer being healed apparently for no reason at all. It was beyond anything the medical establishment had ever witnessed. So Vianna is her name, then began to teach this technique, and it's called theta healing because it involves the practitioner or the healer going into a deep theta state. Theta refers to a deep state of kind of a hypnotic type of trance.
Right.
And which is a very, very deep state. And in this deep state, the practitioner actually connects and merges with the infinite or source or creator. We use the word creator for God because a lot of people have issues with the word God. A lot of us were actually quite traumatized in our childhoods by the religions that we were born into because we were subjected to the biblical version of God, which is often kind of this guy above the clouds that punishes you when you're bad. So creator is way, way, way above and beyond that biblical notion of God and really has very little to do with that concept of God. Creator, when you go there, is really this vast, vast, infinite, infinite potential of light and healing. And when you go there, you recognize that Creator has been just waiting for us till we're evolved enough and we have the skills and the tools to go up there and use this vast potential to accomplish miraculous healings. So what we do when we, once we're up there, we command that he pull a negative belief or thought form or phobia or addiction or any other issue we're having. And when he pulls it, it actually goes to the light for transmutation. It's true transmutation, and it happens through Creator. And Creator, who is infinitely powerful, can make anything happen. And the reason it's so miraculous and it works is because with Creator, it must work. And a common reaction when I explain this to people is to the word command. And yes, we command Creator what to do. And command is from the Latin word, which means to harness energy or to redirect energy. Because
wow.
It's a very, very common response is to say, well, you can't tell God what to do. But the fact is, Zeta healing is so cutting-edge technology and so state-of-the-art that it's really putting the healer into the position of becoming a co-creator. So this is very different from prayer, where you're kind of down here beseeching this God that's up there somewhere to please, please, if he has time or feels like it, please fix this problem. Do you see the difference?
Right. Yeah,
so it really is all about stepping up and recognizing that we are all literally co-creators. We take responsibility for our lives exactly as they are, recognizing that we have created our life exactly the way it is based on our beliefs and thoughts. Buddha said that your life today is the result of all the thoughts you had the day before. So if life is not giving you what you want, or what you want is not showing up, we need to examine what in our subconscious is making all that stuff out there show up or not show up, and what's making it show up the way it's showing up. And we need to take responsibility and become aware of sometimes hidden, what has sometimes been hidden up until now in our subconscious. So how do we know what's hidden in the subconscious? By what's showing up in our life. So the Theta healer sits down with the client. The client tells the healer their pattern, their issue, their problem, and the Theta healer helps identify what the negative thoughts are, and Creator frequently gets very involved in shedding light on those hidden, sometimes hidden beliefs and thoughts. And Creator then lifts them up to the light and literally takes them out, and Creator will also replace them with a positive thought. So a common belief, for instance, is I am not good enough. you'd be amazed what a big, big percentage of the population has that one. So you have creator pull that one out and replace it with a positive thought, such as, I am enough, or I am good enough. And that is Theta Healing, and it has worked with skin cancer and heart disease and allergies and phobias and all kinds of personality issues and anxiety and stress and fear and grief and sadness and anger and you name it. It's quite miraculous.
All right. Well, that sounds like prayer is actually supposed to be. So.
Absolutely. It's really prayer, a much more evolved, much more empowering form of prayer. Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. And I have personally cleared 2 cases of skin cancer and a very, very chronic case of very advanced liver disease. The client was actually on the verge of death, and she's 100% fine, and it's gone. And she had lost a lot of weight. She weighed about 85 pounds. She's back to normal weight. Her liver is functioning completely normal. She had been to every doctor, every practitioner you can think of. Nothing she did worked, and in 4 or 5 sessions, clear it up completely.
Wow.
And I could tell you many, many other miracles as well, but we don't have time to go into
this. This is apart from hands-on healing as well.
Yeah, hands-on healing is something else. Uh-huh.
It's amazing. Wow, Regina, you're just full of surprises. Now, another thing I know that you know about, and I'm very interested in, it's very popular, is feng shui. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Feng shui.
Feng shui. So, you know, I keep cleaning out my house, but it becomes cluttered before you know it, and I just know it's not good feng shui. But what exactly is feng shui, and how does it affect us? And
okay, feng shui is an ancient, very, very ancient Chinese art and science of placement of furniture and objects in your home to allow optimal flow of qi. Qi means universal life energy, which brings with it health, wealth, success, love, harmony, all the things that we look for and need to lead happy, fulfilling lives. This was a very ancient science and art practiced in the ancient dynasties of China. All the ancient temples were designed with this technique, as were the forbidden cities. And it was actually the way the ruling classes throughout ancient China held on to power while the masses or the poor people were prohibited from using it or practicing it under the threat of death, believe it or not. If a poor man or a poor peasant even attempted to design his home according to the practice of feng shui, this was literally punishable by death. Wow. A feng shui master could also be put to death for even daring to teach it to anyone other than a member of the ruling classes. So it's interesting that you mentioned clutter, because clutter is considered to be the enemy of feng shui. Why? Because clutter is usually little piles of paperwork, right? And stuff that you don't know what to do with, and stuff that is actually unnecessary and has become obsolete, usually, in your life, or energy or stuff that has not yet been organized. So what clutter does is it's a constant reminder of the lack of organization we're experiencing in our lives. It's a constant reminder of the attachment that we have usually to the past, such as piles of old clothes, old shoes, old books, old possessions that we're no longer using, but somehow can't quite get ourselves to release and let go. Why? Because there's usually some kind of fear involved that, well, if I get rid of this dress, what if I need it in the future and then I won't have it? Or, well, these shoes that I haven't worn for 10 years, well, what if someday I decide I need them and then I won't have them? So there's usually some kind of fear or insecurity involved in why we hold on to this stuff. So clutter represents lack of organization. It represents attachment to the past. And most of all, it represents chaotic energy that is literally blocking us, and it represents our blockages that are preventing us from moving forward. Because wherever there is clutter, there is a sense of stress, because we get stressed out looking at it. It's a constant reminder of all the stuff we need to do and get done that we just can't get around to because of procrastination or lack of time or lack of interest, actually. And so there are always these little piles always nagging at us every time we pass by that corner or that table. And as anyone who's ever attempted to work on a cluttered desk knows, it can be actually a hindrance to get your work done efficiently when there is always this energy of chaos and disorganization surrounding us. So, yes, clutter is considered the enemy of feng shui, and the first thing a feng shui master will tell a client is, please release and organize your clutter. That's the first thing I tell someone before I even arrive at the house or make the appointment with them, is I tell them, please handle your clutter and call me when that's handled. And feng shui has very much influenced our culture. There are many, many large hotels now doing feng shui. There are banks who are feng shuied. There are big business corporations, law firms, all kinds of business establishments that are now practicing feng shui, as it has been done throughout Asia for thousands and thousands of years. And there is now a 12-step program called Clutterers Anonymous, which is directly the result of the influence feng shui has had in raising our consciousness about the negative effect clutter does have on us and in our lives. So there's literally 12 steps organizations now that you can attend that will help you overcome your cluttering habit. Okay, another big innovation that feng shui has brought into our lives here in the West is fountains. About 10 years ago, you did not see fountains as commonly as it is today. We now see fountains everywhere. Target has fountains. Walmart has fountains. And that is because a fountain is really a very powerful feng shui object. A fountain is all about the flow of water. Why is the flow of water important? Because the flow of water is a lot of energy flowing. And therefore, it brings with it the powerful flow of chi. And that is why you now see a lot of fountains in front of businesses, restaurants, apartment buildings, department stores, which did not happen 10, 15 years ago. And people are buying them for their private homes and apartments as well. Another common thing you see is the bamboo, the green bamboo shoots that you can purchase. That is another feng shui innovation. And the bamboo represents tremendous strength, which people don't realize it, but bamboo is a very, very powerful, strong plant. If you were to plant it in the floor of your home, it is so strong and grows so rapidly, it's also very rapidly growing, that it would literally take the roof right off your house if it were allowed to keep growing. Yet at the same time, it is highly flexible and very, very malleable and very easy to work with. So bamboo is used often in the abundance corner to represent abundance and flow of monetary abundance, as well as health, because we all want to be like a reed of bamboo, which is hollow on the inside, yet very, very strong and very flexible, like we wish our body to be. Any more questions about feng shui?
No, it's all very interesting. We're actually pretty close to the end of our show. We just have a few minutes left.
Sure.
So, I mean, wow, Regina, you're just, it's really amazing. You're a wonderful guest. And we didn't get a chance really to talk much about animal communication or sage and flower remedies and stuff like this. But is there any like last messages you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I can talk a little bit about animal communication. I am, like I mentioned, a psychic, and once my psychic abilities opened up, much to my astonishment, I realized that my dog was talking to me. And this happened about 15 years ago, before I had actually ever heard of animal communication. So when it happened, I was quite astonished, and I was even questioning whether I was making it up, and because I had actually never heard of animal communication 15 years ago. So nevertheless, I was getting very, very strong psychic messages from my dog at the time, and at the time I tested it, I had a boyfriend who would take my dog for walks, and when they'd come back, I would ask the dog what route had they taken, what happened during their walk, and much to my surprise, the dog would communicate all kinds of details about their walk to me, at which I would then run by my boyfriend, who would just be astonished and tell me about the accuracy of everything I had just received from the dog. And that's how my career in animal communication began. So I just want to say briefly that as an animal communicator, I can tell those listeners out there who happen to have a pet, a dog or a horse or a cat or whatever, that I can tell you that your animal is probably much, much more sensitive and aware than you can ever possibly imagine. They are very, very complex little creatures with tremendous sensitivity and awareness and wishes and dreams and, most of all, need for being loved and respected and honored just like we do, we humans do.
Wow.
One of my big dreams is I would love to be a bridge between the animal and human kingdom, because so many people have actually become quite unaware and indifferent to the tremendous sensitivity of these little fluffy creatures that we have in our homes. Can I tell you one brief story about that? Is there a time?
Well, we're actually out of time.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, but I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been really amazing. I mean, and
sure.
A pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to call me, my number again is 818-609-0532. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I hope maybe I can have you on again in the future, because, wow, you have so much to share.
Thank you, Preston.
Well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Regina Perlmutter, and we've been talking about her work with all different kinds of healing. If you'd like to visit her website, it's www.lightonlove.com. That's Light on Love, one word, and there's lots more information there, or you can contact her directly.
Healing at the end, lightonlove.com/healing/.
Okay, and if you'd like to contact her directly through the phone number again is 818-609-0532. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. I hope you can join us next week when we have another exciting guest. Until then, have a great evening.
Thank you, Preston.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.